All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am giving you my review of the All-22, looking at the Falcons' defense in their Week 12 win over the Las Vegas Raiders.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Today's Locked On Falcons is presented by Pepsi, made for football watching. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this world-renowned Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. In today's episode, we will be getting into my All-22 review of the Falcons' Week 12 win over the Las Vegas Raiders, talking about sort of my observations from the Falcons' defense and whether or not this defensive performance holds up as well as it seems in the box score when we break down the film. And we'll also sort of get into my thoughts on players like Isaiah Oliver and Michael Walker, because we know Michael Walker got a really high Pro Football Focus grade from this game. One of the highest we've seen from a Falcons defensive player all year long. And I sit here and I say, I wonder about that. And so we'll get into sort of what I saw on the film with Michael Walker in this Raiders game, as well as what I've seen from Michael Walker in his rookie season. And we'll sort of start things off, though, with our Locked On Falcons lead story, talking about none other than Mekaquan. Yes, we're talking about Laquon Treadwell being elevated to the Falcons roster, coming off the COVID reserve list, coming off the practice squad onto the roster. Olamide Zaccheaus is going on to the injured reserve, and we'll get into that and sort of, does this solve the Falcons' depth problems going into Week 13 with question marks surrounding whether or not Julio Jones is going to play this weekend against the Saints? And we'll get into that as your Locked On Falcons lead story. So the Falcons addressed their wide receiver depth on Tuesday by promoting wide receiver Laquon Treadwell from the practice squad to their active roster. Treadwell also came off the team's reserve COVID-19 list after 2 weeks spent on it. Treadwell winds up replacing wide receiver Olamide Zaccheaus on the roster, who went on injured reserve on Tuesday due to a toe injury he suffered against the Las Vegas Raiders in the Falcons' 43-6 win in Week 12. A former 2016 first-round pick, Treadwell was signed by the Falcons in March after four seasons with the Minnesota Vikings. He was cut at the end of this summer's training camp and was re-signed by the team to their practice squad in Week 2. Treadwell gives the Falcons some much-needed depth behind wide receiver Julio Jones, who missed last week's Raider game with a hamstring injury, and his status for Week 13's matchup against the New Orleans Saints is unknown as of yet. The Falcons losing Zaccheaus is a significant blow to the team's depth, serving as the team's fourth wide receiver, with his biggest stretches of playing time coming in Weeks 3 through 5, when Jones was mostly out of the lineup dealing with a hamstring injury that has nagged him since August. Then Zaccheaus saw significant reps in Week 9 versus the Denver Broncos in the absence of Calvin Ridley, who was dealing with a foot injury. The Broncos game was his most productive game of his career, with a career-high 103 yards on four catches, and scored his second touchdown of his career on a 51-yard bomb from Matt Ryan in that game. Zaccheaus has been primarily used as a Z wide receiver with the Falcons since joining the team as an undrafted free agent out of Virginia in 2019. Ridley's role within the offense is as that Z. However, Treadwell is expected to play more of an X role, which is Jones's role within the Falcons offense. The Falcons offense struggled during Jones's initial absence of the year due to not having a proven backup at that X wide receiver spot on the roster, and it forced Ridley to take over much of that role and led to some inconsistency on his part during that stretch of games. But it remains to be seen if Treadwell is a significantly better option. After all, he failed to make the team's roster working as an X wide receiver, and although Treadwell's inability to contribute on special teams likely was a significant factor in why the Falcons opted to keep him on the practice squad rather than the roster entering the season. Treadwell struggled with production and consistency across 4 years in Minnesota, earning the bust label. and was unable to carve out a significant role in the offense, being overshadowed by Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. Known for his ability to high point and win above the rim in college at Mississippi, Treadwell struggled to win consistently in traffic and gain separation in the NFL. And several Falcons beat writers noted upon his release in early September that Treadwell struggled with drops this past summer. Based off of that body of work, it doesn't give me a ton of confidence that Treadwell will be able to fill the void left not only by an injured Zacchaeus, coupled with the possibility of Jones missing another game due to the hamstring injury, only exasperates those issues. Throw in the fact that confidence in offensive coordinator Dirk Koetter is at an all-time low, and the Falcons face a Saints defense that sacked them 8 times in Week 11, meaning that Matt Ryan is going to need to get rid of the ball quickly. Thus, having wide receivers that can separate quickly is important, which has never been Treadwell's strength. Therefore, I'll continue to stress in the future that the Falcons need to find a viable backup option for if and when Jones misses time in 2021 and beyond, and that is a very underrated need entering this upcoming offseason. Ideally, they'll be able to find their own versions of 2020 draft picks like Chase Claypool, T. Higgins, and or Michael Pittman that can fill those shoes in 2021 and become the heir apparent for Jones, who's only a few months away from turning 32, the same age that Roddy White was, in his last good season as a Falcons wide receiver way back in 2013. While we all hope that Jones continues to play at a high level for many years to come, and there's plenty of reasons to be optimistic that he can and will, it never hurts to be prepared. So guys, there's your Locked On Falcons lead story. And we're going to continue today's episode by talking about my thoughts on the All-22 from the Las Vegas Raiders game, focusing primarily on the defense. And my observations will get into sort of how the Falcons were aggressive with their blitzing and disguising their coverage, and if whether that really paid off for them in a major way, or did they just benefit from the Raiders being bad on offense? And we'll talk about that coming up on today's podcast. But before we get there, we know that there are two key components to losing weight, and they are diet and exercise. Let's talk about the exercise component. When it comes to getting or staying in shape, nothing feels as good as that feeling of accomplishment, of hitting your fitness goals and feeling great about yourself. And Echelon can get you there. Echelon offers the next generation of connected fitness bikes, fitness mirrors, rowing machines, and their all-new StrideSmart treadmill. No matter what your favorite fitness activity, Echelon gives you a fun and challenging workout from the comfort of your own home. Their world-class instructors will motivate you with thousands of daily live and on-demand studio-level classes, always available when you need them. Unlike their competitors, Echelon is affordable for everyone. And one membership lets up to 5 family members all work out at the same time. Right now, you can try any Echelon fitness equipment at home for 30 days. Just go to echelonfit.com/NFL. That's echelonfit.com/NFL. So before we get into the All-22 review, I want to let you guys know that later this week on Friday, we'll have a Q&A episode. And I know some of you have already sent in your questions that I was supposed to answer on today's episode, but I'm punting that till Friday. So please, if you have any further questions, you can send them in via email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com, or you can send them in on your preferred social media platform, whether that's Twitter or Facebook. Of course, we're Locked On Falcons on both platforms. But getting into the All-22 review, I thought watching this game, the Falcons defense played well, but I also think they kind of benefited from the Raiders leaving some throws and leaving some plays on the field. I feel like all the plays where the Falcons clearly made plays, getting the sacks, you know, creating fumbles, creating turnovers, were clearly plays where the Falcons deserve a lot of credit. I think they played well throughout the game, but I thought there were a lot of plays that the Raiders left on the field. And my concern is that we've had past instances where the Falcons defense had a overall good game, but then when you really dig into the film, there are some lapses on the back end. The most prominent example of that is the Week 11 game against Carolina last year, where Kyle Allen was running for his life thanks to the pressure up front, made some questionable decisions, and the Falcons were at that time dealing with issues with miscommunication on the back end, and it didn't go away in that Carolina game, but because of the play up front and because of the sketchy quarterback play on the part of Kyle Allen, the Panthers weren't able to exploit it. But then the following week, when the Falcons couldn't get pressure on Jameis Winston, and Jameis Winston was much more effective, particularly attacking DeMonte Casey and going for Chris Godwin in that Week 12 game, we saw the Falcons defense fall apart. And I wonder if that's going to be the case moving forward. Although fortunately, I think we don't have to necessarily, you know, with Saints quarterback Taysom Hill, we can certainly question whether or not he's capable of exploiting those issues, but we'll get into that probably on tomorrow's crossover podcast. So I think when I was rewatching the first half of the game, I felt like there was a lot of plays in this Raiders game where Derek Carr missed some open receivers. I can't remember where I was reading this, but I remember reading in the last week or two, someone was talking about Derek Carr's progression as a quarterback. Maybe it was on a podcast or maybe it was an article I read, but it was basically they were saying he had a habit of playing fast and he was going to his progressions too quickly early in his career. And that led to him playing a little bit more conservatively because he would get to the check down much faster than what he should get to the check down. And I felt like there were times that he did that in this game, but I also felt there were times where he just kind of missed easy completions on underneath throws or over the middle because he was locked on certain targets down the field. And I thought what was interesting about this game was that the Falcons weren't that effective generating pressure in this game, particularly in the first half of the game. By my count, they pressured Carr on about 30% of his dropped backs in the first half. Typically, you want to see a healthy percentage, about 35 to 40%. Is what you want to see from a pass rush. And, you know, from my count, the Falcons dialed up five-man pressures on 7 of Carr's 23 dropbacks in the first half and only generated pressure on one of those plays. However, the Raiders only had a success rate of 29% on those 7 plays in which the Falcons blitzed. So you hear that, you say, oh, that's great. You know, 29% is really poor success rate passing. You know, ideally you want that to be 50% or higher. But here's the thing. When you look at all the other plays where the Falcons did not blitz against the Raiders in the first half, the Raiders' success rate was even worse. It was only 25%. So it was really the Raiders couldn't do much against the Falcons' man coverage. They only had a 27% success rate against their man coverage, and they had a 0% success rate on, I think, 6 plays in which the Falcons deployed their cover 3 zone. So in the second half, the Falcons were able to dial up a lot more pressure. I had them generating pressure on 68% of Carr and Nathan Peterman's 22 combined dropbacks. So the Falcons were really able to get after the quarterback. The Falcons mostly did that rushing 4. I only counted them bringing 5 or more guys on 4 plays, and that only accounted for like 2 of the 15 times where a Falcons player was able to generate pressure. So I say all this not to discredit the Falcons defense by any means. I certainly think they played well, but I just think they probably caught a few more breaks in addition to generating some of their own luck, particularly on those turnovers and with the pressure in the second half of the game. The things I liked about what they were doing was I liked that they blitzed early in the game. They were bringing 5-man pressures on 5 of the Raiders' first 10 dropbacks, and then even threw in a 4-man pressure with a linebacker blitz on that deep ball that Derek Carr underthrew on Darren Waller. And I think maybe the early pressure was rattling Carr early in the game throughout the first quarter, and maybe that messed with the clock in his head and led to some of those mistakes that I was talking about earlier. So I also liked the fact that the Falcons were consistent with disguising their cover 2 looks. They would often sort of show man coverage pre-snap and then switch into cover 2. That's been a relatively regular staple of the Falcons under Raheem Morris. They've done it mixed at times this season. What's interesting, though, is it wasn't that effective because their cover 2 was their least effective coverage. As I said, 27% success rate against cover 1, 29% success rate against cover 3, but the Raiders had a 50% success rate against the Falcons' cover 2. So all that disguise wasn't really stopping the Raiders from having success moving the ball on the Falcons. And it just kind of reinforces the opinion that I've always kind of held, is that disguising your coverages only goes so far in terms of improving and impacting your defense. Most of the impact comes from your pressure, and it's just you just need the guys on the back end to cover well. And on that note, let's move on to some individual performances. I thought AJ Terrell was a little bit up and down. I've seen a lot of people sort of praise his performance in this Raiders game, and like to me watching the film, it didn't really jump out to me as significantly better than anything he's done over like the last 6 weeks, you know. So like I'm not quite there yet, but I'll be curious to see if the Falcons will be a little bit more willing to ask AJ Terrell to shadow Michael Thomas in the second Saints get matchup. I know they did that last year a little bit more, trying to get more instances of Desmond Trufant and Michael Thomas in the second Saints game after Thomas had a big game in the first time. But what's interesting is you see this pattern repeat itself for pretty much the last couple of years, which is Michael Thomas has a really big first game against the Falcons, and then the Falcons make adjustments and he's pretty quiet in the second game, and yet the Falcons lose. Right? You go back to 2017. In the first game, Michael Thomas had 117 yards. Falcons won that game, 66 yards for Michael Thomas. In the second game, the Falcons lost. In 2018, Thomas had 129 yards in the first Saints game. Falcons lost that game. He had 38 yards in the second Saints game. The Falcons lost again. Right? 2019, the Falcons or Michael Thomas had 152 yards in the first game and the Falcons won. And then he only had 48 yards in the second game and the Falcons lost. And in 2020, we know that Michael Thomas had 104 yards in the first game. So we'll see, you know, based off of that, he's probably going to have like, I don't know, 30 yards in the second game. And somehow the Falcons will find a way to lose as if history repeats itself. So we'll see if the Falcons are, you know, if Terrell is part of the equation, part of the formula to try to limit Michael Thomas a little bit more than they did in the past. But really, I guess it boils down to stopping Alvin Kamara, because I noticed, I think the trend generally is Alvin Kamara in the running game has a much better game in that second game. And the Falcons offense usually struggles a lot more, but I don't know if they can struggle any more than they did in the first Saints game. So we'll see, you know, the arrows pointing up for them in that regard. Another individual I want to point out is Isaiah Oliver. I thought he did a lot of good work in run support in this game, but he struggled quite a bit in coverage with Hunter Renfrow being too quick for him. And we've seen this pattern, you know, this was arguably, you know, Oliver's worst statistical game of the season since he made the move to the slot in week 5. The other game would have been the week 9 game against KJ Hamler. And, you know, there's a trend there. There's a pattern there. And, you know, we've seen Oliver, for the most part, be pretty effective as a slot corner since he took over in week 5. And you're not seeing him give up as many big plays in that role because he tends to get a little bit more protection over the top against safety and your safety help in terms of, and you're not also seeing, you know, slot corners, slot receivers, I'm sorry, aren't typically, you know, burners, aren't, you know, stretching the field so much. So Oliver's big, you know, Achilles heel is speed, and that got exposed a lot more on the outside than it does on in the slot. So I think what's going to be interesting to see how Oliver fares for the rest of the season as a slot, you know, obviously, when we look at if he struggles against these fast, quick slot receivers, obviously Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman are going to be a difficult matchup for him later in the season. But for the most part, other than that, he's got some big slots that he's going to be mostly facing: Keenan Allen, Michael Thomas, Chris Godwin. So I'll be interested to see how Oliver fares against those matchups. And I wonder, you know, how he performs. If he performs well against those bigger guys, you know, it will do sort of determine how salvageable he's going to be moving forward and whether or not he can be a part of this team's, you know, regular cornerback rotation. Like, again, against the Hunter Renfrows and the KJ Hamlers and the Tyreek Hills, yeah, you're not going to want Oliver playing the slot in those games. But if we play some bigger slot receivers, then you can confidently trust Isaiah Oliver to be able to hold his own against some of those guys. What's going to be interesting is, at least right now, based off how those teams' rosters are structured, we'll see if those change in the offseason, but with the Falcons facing the AFC and the NFC East next year, you're not right now seeing a whole bunch of big slot receivers with those guys. You're seeing more of the Cole Beasleys and the Jamison Crowders, which are the type of guys that typically give Isaiah Oliver problems. So right now, based off of where the schedule is, I don't know how big a role Oliver is going to have if we know he's going to struggle in those particular matchups. So we'll just have to sort of see. And I think if he does well against Allen, Thomas, and Godwin, that will at least say, okay, well, whenever we do face a big slot like a Thomas and a Godwin, which we'll see, you know, potentially 4 times a year, you know, those are the games where Isaiah Oliver can make an impact. So we're going to continue today's podcast by talking about another individual, wrap up today's episode by talking about the mystery behind Michael Walker's elevated Pro Football Focus grades. And we'll get into that coming up on today's podcast. But we've already talked about the exercise component of diet and exercise and losing weight. And this time of year, losing weight is important. Let's talk about the diet component. And Built Bar is the place that can help you out in that regard. Built Bars are the best tasting protein bar on the market. They're low in calories, low in sugar, high in protein, high in fiber. They all have 100% real chocolate in them. They're perfect for keto diets. Anybody that's health conscious and doesn't want to sacrifice flavor, they brought out 6 new flavors over the summer: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp, and to go along with the old favorites like coconut almond, toffee almond, peanut butter brownie. You know, these are some of the flavors that I have frequented in my Built Bar orders, and you guys can too. And all you have to do is head over to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 20% off your next order. And if you've already used that promo code, you can use it again, so you don't have to miss out on the all-new Built Bar. Again, that's promo code Locked On for 20% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. So before we get into the conversation around Michael Walker, I do want to let you guys know that tomorrow's episode is Crossover Thursday across the entire Locked On NFL network of podcasts, and I'll be crossing over with Ross Jackson of Locked On Saints. We'll be discussing Taysom Hill, and we'll be discussing whether the Falcons will match up better against a formidable Saints pass rush, especially if they're down one of their starting offensive linemen in James Carpenter. And the Locked On Podcast Network is the only place that you can find Crossover Thursday, your team every day. So let's talk about Michael Walker. And I got to be upfront. I don't hate Michael Walker. If you were asking me where would I would rate Michael Walker on like a 10-point scale, I'd say he's like a 5. Or if you were going for a letter grade, he'd be like a C based off of his performance in 2020. But Pro Football Focus has him rated way higher than that. And let's talk about it a little bit. He's the second highest graded defensive player on the Falcons behind Grady Jarrett. He's the 9th highest graded linebacker in the NFL. He's the highest graded rookie linebacker in the NFL. And obviously he's the highest graded Falcons linebacker above guys like Deion Jones and Foye Olukun. And what's interesting is, you know, basically since like week 5, he's gotten ratings grades of like 65 or higher pretty much every week. And that culminated this past week in an 89.9 grade, which is, you know, basically 0.1 point off of what Pro Football Focus on their 100 points grading scale considers elite, right? So that 89.9 grade is the third highest grade, tied for the third highest grade with Jacob Tuimoloau, who also had an 89.9 grade in this Raiders game, as the third highest grade that any Falcons defender has had this year. So the higher graded games were Foye Olukun's week 2 game against the Dallas Cowboys, where he had a 91.3 game, and that was the game where he had 3 forced fumbles in the first quarter alone. And then Deion Jones's week 6 game against the Vikings, where he also had a 91.3 game, and that was a game where he had 3 pass breakups and an interception. And of course, this past week, JTM, Jacob Tuimoloau against the Raiders, had 4 quarterback hurries or pressures, including a sack in which he forced a fumble, and he recovered that fumble as well as recovering another fumble. And I just don't understand why Walker's performance, where he had 1 assisted tackle in like maybe 3 or 4 solid reps in coverage, but didn't really make many plays there, and 3 pressures, is on the level of those 3 performances that I've talked about. Now, when we look at the pressures, one of his pressures was on a stunt on the interception by Deion Jones. Although I think John Kaminsky deserves the bulk of the credit for pressuring the quarterback, he was the guy that really disrupted the throw that forced Derek Carr, I'm almost going to call him David, Derek Carr to throw behind Devontae Booker that led to Jones picking it off. But, you know, on that stunt, Walker was sort of in Carr's face, so he contributed in that regard. But I think even if he wasn't there, you know, Kaminsky would have made that play and it would have been a pick regardless. Then his other pressure came unblocked when Carr was rolling out near the goal line, and that forced Carr to throw the ball away. So positive there. And then the third pressure was on the very immediate previous play where he was able to beat Brandon Parker on a speed rush and forced Carr to step up in the pocket. And then Carr was able to sort of slide and throw the ball to an open Henry Ruggs, who had beaten Keanu Neal, but Ruggs dropped the pass, which should have been a touchdown. But then he had a pass deflection on the first play of the game, but technically that play doesn't count on the stat sheets because an offsides penalty nullified it. So again, nice plays by Michael Walker. Not to sit here and say he was invisible in this game by any means. He did have a somewhat impactful performance, but not to the level where I think that deserves an 89.9 grade and is outshining any game that Grady Jarrett has had this season. So I'm not going to necessarily throw Pro Football Focus under the bus. You know, my general rule of thumb is that I generally agree with like 80% of their grades and 20% are a little questionable. So that basically means if you have like 24 starters, like 19 of them, I'm going to generally think are in the ballpark or dead on accurate. And like 5 of them, I'm going to be like, I don't know what they're seeing. And I feel like Walker fits into that latter category of the 5 that I don't know what they're seeing. So when I look at Michael Walker's performance this year, I like it when he's on the line of scrimmage. I feel like when he's had some opportunities to rush the quarterback, he's generally been effective. He's shown a decent blend of speed and power. This past week was really the first time all season long where he really beat somebody on that play where he beat Parker on the speed rush and tried to use a rip move that was somewhat effective. Wasn't necessarily the most polished rip move, but we understand that. Like, he's a linebacker. Like, you know, you're not expecting him to be able to bust out that, you know, year 13 Jonathan Babineau rip move that was a staple of his career. But when you look at, you know, Walker's had credited for 5 pressures this year. The 4 other ones prior to that one this week, all of them were the result of either being unblocked or scheme, like stunts and twists. So I don't know if, like, his pass rush is like all that. It's like he's flashed some ability there, but like it's not as if like we're talking about a guy that's consistently beating guys. But he can develop there. I think from a coverage standpoint, I thought he showed some positive reps in this Raiders game where he was able to stick with Darren Waller the past week in man coverage. I feel like he's been mostly fine in man coverage. I feel like zone coverage has been a little bit more hit and miss. I think there's obviously plays where he's broken up some passes, particularly over the last 2 weeks in zone coverage, where he's been able to find himself in the throwing lane and been able to deflect some passes. But I think if you're really paying attention to him in zone coverage outside of those few plays, there's a lot of times where he's kind of lost and out of position. And I think that's understandable given his youth. I think most of the issues are related to inexperience, not really knowing what he's doing. I think when he's playing against the run, when he's on the line of scrimmage, I think he's been pretty effective. When it comes to setting the edge, I think he does a generally good job there. I think when he's playing off the ball, though, I think that's where he has problems as a run defender. He's too often playing on his heels. He's a little hesitant hitting his gap. There's been numerous times over this season where I have seen plays where he's, you know, playing that weak side linebacker spot. There's a gap opens up and, you know, he could shoot that gap and make a play in the backfield. And he's just sort of sitting there chopping his feet, waiting for the running back to hit the hole and bounce the play. So he's not processing and recognizing and reading as quickly as you want, but that's understandable. He's a rookie, not to mention he's a rookie that didn't spend a lot of time playing off-ball linebacker in college at Fresno State, basically half of a season last year as an off-ball linebacker. And prior to that, it was more of a pass rusher, a DN, Sam linebacker type of player. So, you know, it goes back to my scouting report of Walker, you know, earlier this summer, where I was like watching him, I wasn't that impressed of him as an off-ball linebacker. I thought he was a little bit more impressive playing on the line of scrimmage. And I feel like he's lived exactly up to that so far through his rookie season. And I think with experience, he can definitely get better. I think my concern is that's been a pattern that we have constantly said about Falcons linebackers in the past, and it hasn't lived up to the hype. That was the thing with Devondre Campbell, and he didn't get better. We've seen Deion Jones continue to make mental mistakes now in his 5th year in the NFL, that he's making the same mistakes that he was making as a rookie. You know, Duke Riley never progressed here in Atlanta, and that those are reasons why I'm not a huge Jeff Ulbrich fan, because I think in general linebackers haven't really developed under him over the last, you know, 5 years here in Atlanta. Now you'd probably say, well, what about Foye Olakun, Aaron? And I say, well, look, that's not the battle I'm here to fight. That's not the hill I'm here to die on. But, you know, I think under this regime, generally speaking, what you see from a guy his rookie season has been what we have seen from him the rest of their time in Atlanta. And again, that applies to Duke Riley, that applies to Campbell, that applies to Deion Jones. And I certainly think you can at least make an argument that Foye Olakun also fits into that paradigm. Now, you also say, well, Mr. Ulbrich hater, you know, we're going to have a brand new coaching staff next year. And I say, maybe, you know, 4 days ago, I would have been like, yeah, you're right. We're going to have new coaching staff. We're going to have potentially a better linebackers coach, and that's not going to be the same issue moving forward with a better staff. But today, you know, I don't know if we're going to have a new coaching staff next year. I'm not as confident as I was 4 days ago. That's basically what I'm saying. So I will say, you know, in conclusion about Mike Walker, I think he's fine. I think he's solid. I think he's a solid role player, a solid complementary starter. I think he can be an effective role player moving forward. I think he can be a more consistent and less frustrating version of Devondre Campbell. I think ultimately on a 10-point scale, he's going to be a 5 or a 6 in the long run. Potentially, I'm a little bit more confident now that he's going to be a 6 than I was, you know, post-draft when I was like, he's a 5, or maybe a little bit confident, not the right word, optimistic that he's going to be a 6 in the long run. But, and there's nothing wrong with being a 6, you know, most NFL players are 4, 5s, and 6s when we're talking about grading guys on a 10-point scale. I just think there's a tendency from people to hype up guys. And you've heard Jeff Schultz come on the podcast multiple times over the last several months and say, you know, several players particularly on the defense have been overrated by folks over the years. And I think this is what contributes it to, because we get a guy flashes some potential and people want to hype that guy up as a superstar in the making. And so I just kind of want to plant my flag now and say in 2020, so that, you know, 3 years from now, when Michael Walker is probably still going to be a effective complementary role player starter or whatever the case may be, I'm going to be like, yeah, this is what we've been, I said, told you guys this 3 years ago, but you didn't want to believe me because you like to buy into hype. And I think, unfortunately, Pro Football Focus, you know, is perpetuating that hype and it confounds me. You know, I would love to eat that plate of crow and have Michael Walker turn into a quote unquote star in the making. But we'll just see how that goes. Anyway, guys, I appreciate you tuning in for another All 22 review. As I said earlier, we will be doing a crossover Thursday tomorrow with Ross Jackson. If you have any questions that you want to get to me for later in the week on a, you know, Q&A Fan Friday, whatever you want to call it, episode, you can send those questions in via Twitter to Locked On Falcons, via Facebook to Locked On Falcons, or send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Until then, guys.